Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today, we are going to hopefully have on Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. Mariam just texted to say she didn't receive the invitation, although it was sent, so I sent it again. It may be a few minutes before she comes on, but what I'd like to talk about this afternoon, well, this afternoon for us, this evening for some others in other countries, and actually afternoon in other parts of the country, I'd like to talk about a lot of these things that are happening in society today, what's going on in the world, and I just feel so bad for so many people, and it's because the hearts of many have grown cold. We're living in a society where there's no compassion. There's nothing at all. Nothing at all that, hold on a second, I have to reply to this sent again. Many of you have seen articles about there were three cops, police officers, some may call them, when they do something like this, I call them cops, that had been sexually assaulting a 13-year-old for several years, and she was found dead in a hotel in Massachusetts. She was pregnant, and they claimed that she committed suicide. Yesterday, we spoke about abuses that women go through, and also men, but primarily women. And unfortunately, these things are not addressed. Many women are in prison because of abusive relationships, as well as men being in prison for abusive relationships. It doesn't need to be abusive physically, although it usually becomes physical as time goes on if that emotional abuse continues. In many people, as I say all the time, the heart is very sensitive. It's a thin line between love and hate. And so many people are in prison as a result of being lied to, deceived, abused, violated, whatever the case may be. Case, they say on the news, this girl had no family. Somehow, she was able to be put up in a hotel or was able to be in a place where she was violated over and over and over again. And I was thinking about it after listening to the news and reading about it on the internet and in the papers. This girl was probably too afraid to go for help. She was probably too afraid to talk to anybody about it, because who would believe at the time, who would believe a 13 or an adolescent at that age? Who would believe someone like that when they're reporting being abused sexually by police officers? My heart goes out to that girl. And if she has family anywhere, and I know she must have family somewhere that failed her, I hope that they are happy with themselves for letting this child, now an adult, go through what she had to go through all those years, only to be found in a hotel room, pregnant and dead. The investigation, as far as I know, was supposedly had ended, or the findings were sent in February. But here we are in September, and there's been no updates, and there's been no more talk about it. But when you go on the internet and you type in, three stolen police officers investigated, you'll see it all over the internet. So what is going on in this country? What are we dealing with? With all the hatred, with all the crimes that are being committed by people in uniform and with titles being swept under the carpet, what is it all about? We have racism in this country. this country called the United States of America. The United States of America. I just can't understand it. I can't understand how it continues. And they bring these subjects up. The media puts it on the news for a couple of times and it's forgotten. But as the chief said, the one that was doing the investigation, she said, this is a human being we're talking about. A human being. What if it was one of your children? What if it was someone that you were close to? Our loved ones are being persecuted throughout the country and around the world, but mainly in the United States of America. Mass incarceration, 2.3 million people in prison. Advocates who refuse to help certain prisoners because they target them. They target them because they're listening to their peers, or they're listening to corrupt lawyers, or they're listening to corrupt courts, judges, advocates. We have some good advocates in this country, and we have some good advocates around, and yet we have some corrupt advocates just like we have in the court system, in the prison system, in the government. There's good and bad. But this 13-year-old child, to go through all those years of being molested, I mean, being raped by police officers. There were three of them from Stoughton, and they talked about investigating one from Abington. For several years, this girl was going through this, not having any family, and then finding her pregnant and dead in a hotel room, claiming that she committed suicide. Someone in that group that got her pregnant did not want it to come out. And I hope they do investigate further and don't just wipe this under the carpet. And that was my say. Now, I want to introduce once again, and most of you and probably all of you are familiar with Maryam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist. And she is back with us today to speak on the many issues in America which has resulted in the downfall of individuals in the prisons, communities, on the streets, in the homeless shelters, and beyond. Again, we have mass incarceration in the United States, in the penal system in this country, that could be prevented if more mental health specialists in Department of Mental Health, psychological associations, substance abuse facilities, and other providers of the United States were to appropriately and successfully provide the services they vow to do. We are blessed to have Maryam Jacobs all the way from across the pond taking time to come on the show to speak on concerning issues occurring in the United States. This is something that professionals, providers in the United States should be doing, coming forward to talk about it. But yet we have other people in other countries who show more concern for the United States individuals, the citizens, than even our own. So we are going to now welcome for the another blessed time, Maryam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. Maryam, are you on with us?
Hello, Leona. Yes, I am here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. I am kind of like off these days. There's so many things going on in the country and especially in Massachusetts, that I've been kind of like frustrated and upset and angry, and there's so much going on right now that I just can't understand why more people are not getting involved to resolve these issues. And we have you coming all the way from the Netherlands on the show to talk about some of these issues. So once again, can you just introduce yourself to those that may not have met you before or heard of you, and tell us a little bit about what you've been doing recently? There's been a lot of updates, I'm sure, that you have to talk about.
Yes, especially in
school.
yes, I'm always going to school. My name is Maryam Jacobs. I live in the Netherlands. I work as a psychosocial therapist, also with people who are incarcerated in our prison system. I recently graduated for the Master of Philosophy, so I am now a philosopher, and I graduated on the subject mass incarceration in the United States. For my thesis, I have been researching on the underlying patterns that I see concerning the United States prison system, and I made a comparison between underlying patterns between the concentration camps in World War II and the current prison system in the United States, and I found some similarities. This thesis is now being transformed into a little book, and it will be also translated in English, and it will be published because I think it's it might be interesting information for people who really want to know what's going on beneath the well-known facts that we already know. So I started a new study, and that's religion, because religion is also a huge part in countries and in our societies, and that's what I'm doing now. And another thing is that I think that I'm going to develop a short course for incarcerated men and women, and I will implement it in the Dutch prison system. It's a philosophical course where incarcerated people learn how to think about their own thoughts, how to think independently, how to reflect on themselves. I think that's very contributing to healing in the system. So I'm doing a lot of things right now, but they are interesting, Leona.
And that's what makes it even more important. And for that, I say it's an honor to have you on with us, Mariam.
Thank you.
I was recently talking about something that was on the news about a young girl who had been, for years had been, she was being sexually assaulted, and they found her in a hotel room, pregnant and deceased. And it bothered me because all I could think about when they said she had no family was that this girl must have been so alone and so afraid. And there were at least three or four police officers involved. And I tell people, don't stereotype when it comes to the incarcerated, because every situation is different. And I want to say the same thing when people think that all police officers, all law enforcement, everybody's supposed to be perfect if they're in uniform or have titles or whatever. We have to start looking at all sides, as you say, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about the deeper justice, because this is where I feel deeper justice is really needed, for them to look more into this case and not just dismiss it because the girl was alleged to have committed suicide.
What I find important and where deeper justice stands for is looking further than the surface, and don't stay stuck in only judgment and bias. I think a case like, you know, what you're describing now, it's awful. It's very sad. It also says something about communities, that this can happen. So the communities also should reflect on themselves and ask themselves, how could this happen in our community? That's also, in fact, restorative justice. When I look at incarcerated people, they are convicted by court. So they are paying the price for the crime they committed. And staying with that leads to nowhere. You know, if you only stay in revenge, anger, and all that, you only get more victims. So deeper justice leaves judgment, biases, and all that for what it is, because that's already done by lawyers and in the court system. But it looks at the individual in the prison, and it wants to know it wants to get more insight in what led to the crime. So what was the life path that led to the crime? What happened on the way? What message has the crime itself? So learning from the crime, we have to learn from mistakes, and the crimes are huge mistakes, but they contain important life lessons. So it is about the individual who learns to look at himself and try to understand in depth who he really is, what went wrong, and how he can change his life path so he will not commit crimes again. And it's all without judgment, without bias, without anger, without anything of that. It's open. This approach is open. It's human. And I think that's the most important thing for somebody to get the possibility to heal himself. Because if incarcerated people stay wounded and then get released, then you get this high number of recidivism. Because if I don't know what mistake I have made, or if I don't have insight in what happened in my life, why did I do what I do, then I can do it again, because I didn't learn from it. And the basic attitude, basic approach is being human and humanize the incarcerated people again. They are now very dehumanized in the system, because the system is a dehumanizing system. And a deeper justice wants to restore the human being inside incarcerated individuals. So looking behind the crime to the human being who is hiding behind that. And I think that's crucial in the American prison system. It's crucial.
And you know, a lot of times listening to the radio show, I'm sure a lot of people are saying, well, what about the victims? Well, as I mentioned, a lot of times, a lot of these incarcerated individuals are victims as well. And here we have an incident where a young lady is gone, had been used and violated. She was a pure example of being victimized. And yet, because of the people that were involved, you don't hear about it as much. They haven't named the young lady who was violated. They didn't name her. They didn't name the race. They did name the police. They didn't name the police officers, which is kind of strange to me, because I would think that they would have named everyone involved if this was supposed to have been turned in February. But it's just, I just want the public to know, when they listen to this radio show and they talk about victims, a lot of these victims, had that girl exposed them, she probably would have been in prison, because as she was afraid of, I'm sure, that nobody would believe that she was being violated in that way. I'm sure she didn't think that anyone would believe her, and maybe she was told that by those in uniform.
Yeah, well, if I go, sorry that I interrupt you, but if I go back to your first, the first thing you said is, what about the victims? That's what a lot of people ask. Well, if somebody is convicted of a crime, he is doing his time. That's his punishment. In the Netherlands, doing your time is your punishment. That's it. So you pay with time of your life for the crime that you committed. It's a high price, but okay, you did commit the crime, so you have to do the time. But deeper justice is not about, it's more about how can you do the time. If somebody does the time and he learns nothing from the things that happened in his life and the crime he has committed, he will never be able to feel true remorse. So I think if an offender does his time, and during that time he gets healed, and not only healed, but he also learns how to have real remorse, then it also heals the victim. You know, if you only stay stuck in revenge and more punishment, the crime, you cannot turn that around. You cannot make it undone. You know, that's what incarcerated people say. I cannot make my crime undone. I can not go back in time and undo it. So the only thing that he can do, and he has to do it, is heal himself, work on his on himself, work on his character, grow towards true remorse towards the victim, and that heals the victim too. And that, in fact, also restorative justice. But it's also deeper justice. And what you see now is everything is based on judgment, bias, who's good, who's bad. It does, life doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way because, you know, if I punish somebody 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, the crime cannot be undone. It's, you know, so you have to do something else. Otherwise, everybody is stuck. The offender is stuck. The victim stays stuck in revenge. And the system is stuck. And the community stays stuck. You only have losers when you don't, when you stay stuck in revenge. Then you only have losers.
I believe the media has a lot to do with keeping things going too, because the media reports the news over and over and over again. And depending on who committed the offense or the crime, some get more media attention than others. Some get overly publicized, while others get under publicized. And I think this is why a lot of families cannot heal, because of the media and because of the repetitive statements.
I think in the United States you also have this idea of glorifying violence. You know, the gun thing, and you have violent films and in Hollywood, and violence, you know, is some way glorified. If you look at YouTube, and you have these quote-unquote documentaries, they are not really documentaries in my eyes, but you have these quote-unquote documentaries about the prison system. There, the prison system itself is glorified, and that's a very dangerous thing. So a lot of media make more money with glorifying the prison system, the bad guys, the punishment. I think, you know, restorative justice, or what I explained about deeper justice, not so many people are really interested in that. And that's a shame.
I think that's
violence is a very big problem in your country. You are living in a very violent country. I'm sorry to say that. I love your country, but it's very violent.
I know so many others have said that from other countries as well. And, you know, as you said, the entire ordeal in this country when it comes to those that are serving their time, they first of all, they're getting these very harsh sentences, and the rehabilitation is not for everyone, even if there were others that wanted it. If there are prisoners that want the help, they want the rehabilitation, they want the educational courses, they want the work programs, they're being denied. And I always say, what really puzzles me, how can our legislative members who make up the laws, how can they even consider criminal justice reform when they have not a clue what it's about, because they're not going in to meet with the incarcerated individuals? It's like people in the streets. It's like these protesters that are protesting anti-abortion, but yet they're not doing anything to help these women who are struggling on their own to keep the child or children that they have. They talk about many of them being on welfare. Well, these people want them to keep their babies, then help them to get off of welfare. Help them to get to programs and get to facilities where they can get help. One thing and doing another.
Yeah, but I believe there have been a lot of cuts in social services. A lot in your country is privatized, and then we come, to, of course, again to the corporal powers. A lot is privatized, and And that makes it more difficult. So I think in your country, corporal power and politics are very interwoven, intertwined. You have the lobby, and you know the lobbyists. They are huge in your country, and in fact, they decide the law. And we know also with mass incarceration, it makes a lot of money. It's a billion-dollar industry. So, and these legislators, they are also influenced by lobbyists who earn money from the prison system. And I think, you know, if there would be real reform in the system and people would be rehabilitated and, you know, the recidivism would lower, I think there would be a big problem for some corporations who cannot make money anymore. And that's playing a huge role on the background.
Exactly.
And the politicians are also chosen. There's also a lot of money involved in politics, you know, the elections and all that. It's all about money. Money, 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 money. Not human beings.
Yeah,
this comedian George Carlin, he died I don't know how many years ago. Everybody in the United States know him. I see some little, you know, sketches from him on YouTube. He said, "You think you are free, but you own us." And I think he's right.
Can you repeat that? By
the corporations.
Can you repeat that, Miriam? You broke up just for a split second there.
Oh, sorry. This stand-up comedian in the United States, he passed away, I don't know how many years ago, George Carlin. He's very rude, but he's honest. And he says to the public, he said, "You think you have freedom, but you have owners. You have owners. And those are the big corporations, the privatized companies. And they decide what you buy, how you live, how you do, what you earn, and all that." And, you know, it is right. He is right. That's what you see. I mean, how many innocent people are there in prison and they almost cannot get released? How many people are in prison because they simply cannot pay their bill? Who has a bill system? Only the Philippines and the United States have a bill system. We don't have bill systems. I believe it's about 96 or 97% of the cases never reach court. While the Fifth Amendment says every citizen has the right for a fair trial. Who gets a fair trial? There are almost no trials because they cannot pay for them because it's mass incarceration. So you have to pay your way out. I mean, are we talking about justice or are we talking about business? This has nothing to do with justice. So... There are a lot of problems in your country when it comes to mass incarceration, and it's a very smart game, but
the way I look at it is, as you said, there's a lot of problems, there's a lot of things going on, but you also mentioned in the past, and these are known facts, this country is about retaliation, it's about vengeance, it's about racism. You know, it doesn't use the wisdom to know that the majority of people incarcerated are people who are mentally ill, psychologically ill, or that have addictions. There's so many like these individuals who end up in relationships where they. I bring this up all the time because this is another thing that bothered me was the Megan Carlson that talked her boyfriend into committing suicide. You know, had it gone the other way, he would have been serving a life in prison. But she got less than a year or about a year inside. But there are so many reasons people are in prison. And it all stems from racism, retaliation, hatred, vengeance, all these things. And there's so many people in prison who were addicted at the time of their crime. A lot of them have been in over 20, 25 years. They deserve to be able to have their freedom. As it is in other countries, you don't have mass incarceration in other countries. you don't have the sentences being death penalty and life without parole and life sentences. It just doesn't make sense. I can't understand what happened in the United States. You know, here it moves, it takes 1 foot forward and 3 yards backwards. It's almost like anytime there's any bit of progress, someone or some people end up changing the laws or changing the rules or making it fit their needs and not the needs of the public.
I think it is sad, and I think what I see is that politics has abandoned its own people. When I look at now the Biden administration bringing millions and millions of dollars to Ukraine, while I think, why don't you care for your own country? You know, you are bringing millions of dollars to on the other side of the ocean, while your own country is in such need, with all the homeless people, people who cannot reach healthcare because it's so expensive, people living in cars while they have two jobs. There are so many big, big issues in your country, but the money is going to war, like it always has been gone to war. Your country easily invades other countries. I mean, what we see now is that, you know, Putin, and I don't like Putin, he's dangerous. Putin invaded Ukraine, and everybody is condemning that. But, you know, the United States invaded Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam and Cuba and Venezuela. And what's the difference? I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah.
You know, and so much money is going to all these wars. Now so much money is going to Ukraine. Well, you know, you guys, your communities, citizens, you need money. There's a lot of division, I believe, now in the United States, you know, from the inside out. And
exactly.
It's not getting really better, because if you think about the abortion issue, what scares me is not only the decision that abortion is not allowed. I mean, that's, you know, you can be in support of it or not, but the control that people, you know, are now have to control each other and report each other when they suspect somebody who wants to have an abortion. It's like you're becoming more and more a police state, you know. If I have to report my, you know, female neighbor, then I am a bit, you know, that's what happens, you know, in World War II, you know, with the Nazis. That scares me. And I think that a lot of these issues like abortion, but also racism, for as long as people are divided and fighting each other, they don't unite and protest. And I think for politics, like an issue like racism is a tool. It's a problem for the people in the communities and in the streets. But I think for politicians, it's a tool because, you know, people don't protest because they are busy fighting each other. It's a divide and conquer principle. And I wish that people could see that, you know, but...
I think it's also insecure. I always say this, insecurity. Because if we all remain neutral in other people's battles, other people's conflict, then there wouldn't be so much violence in this country. There wouldn't be so many people that being let down. And in this country, it's almost like people are so insecure that they can't decide for themselves. They can't make up their own decision. People that treat them with respect, they will turn against in a minute because of their peers, because of the peers telling them that they're having a problem. So if one, say a lawyer has a problem with the client, they're going to tell all their fellow lawyers, and all their fellow lawyers are going to take sides. It doesn't make sense, but that's what we live in. We live in a country where they take sides, they get involved in everybody else's business, and before you know it, it's division. And unfortunately, as you say, this country, this state, and this country, the United States of America, is in such devastation right now because of the monies that were going over to a country that other countries were also supporting. The United States of America does not have to be the bully or the leader of the pack. Because now with NATO, there's so many countries involved that they were all sending money and sending supplies and everything. But when they started to see all the billions of dollars being sent to Ukraine from our president of the United States of America, it seemed like a lot of them backed away. You don't hear of them supporting Ukraine the way the United States has been doing it. And now even the corporate offices, the corporations are having problems financially, economically. They're talking about it themselves. The corporations in the United States of America, there's a lot of them that are having difficulty with the economy as well now.
Yeah, it is really becoming bad. That's what I see. And sometimes when I think about the war in Ukraine, it's like as if it's a war between the United States, you know, the old war between the United States and Russia. I don't know, but sometimes I think, you know, that it is like that. And I think also United States always want to be number one, you know, leader in the world. And now they are forced to cooperate because China is rising. United States will not be the only power anymore. And
no.
I think that's good. I think that's good. They have to learn to cooperate.
The thing is now, though, China is powerful, but, you know, it's like all nations are coming together for that final day. And they're talking more about the consequences if Vladimir Putin does start to use nuclear weapons. They're talking about the consequences. What they're not talking about is a third world war, a war that's going to destroy the world, and that's about what is going to happen.
Yeah, I think we have to change. We will have a shift of power, and that's a worldwide thing. And we also have the environment problem. So right now there is so much going on, and there's so much tension in the world. And
it's like a walking time bomb.
And when you look at the United States and you think about mass incarceration, you know, it's part of a whole web of all kinds of issues. Mass incarceration is not an isolated system and it's not an isolated problem. It mirrors society. That's what I think.
I'm sorry about that. I've been getting these robocalls. You know, sometimes these calls, the government was also supposed to be doing something about this too. People are getting these calls all the time and the government was trying to work on a solution. But again, all the focus has been overseas instead of here in the United States where all these issues are. Escalating.
Yeah. I think I was not a supporter of Trump, but I think that was a good thing of Trump, that he did not start a war in those 4 years, and he was focused on, you know, his own country.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I think that's what is needed. I don't think we need Trump, but I do think you need a leader who is going to focus on rebuilding the United States, you know, the infrastructure, getting, you know, the middle class now is shrinking in your country. So you have the poor and you have the rich, and the middle class is shrinking.
That's true.
And
that is so true.
And you can see the welfare of a nation. You can see, you know, you can look at it. You can see the welfare, the measure of welfare, you can see it in how big the middle class is. And in your country, it's more poor people, and well, there are a few very rich people, multi-millionaires, and there is less and less in between. You know, people who need to work two or three jobs, and still cannot pay for a house. You know, living in cars while they pay taxes and they work.
Yeah.
And you have the homeless people who have nothing. And then you see also with the privatization, all the addicted people who, you know, who cannot reach the proper treatment and they end up in prison. I think if you would take away the people who, you know, who have psychological problems, trauma, addictions and all that, or people, you know, who are incarcerated because they simply don't have the money to pay themselves out. If you would, you know, take all these people out of the prison, you would have only a few prisons left, only for the people who really committed the crime and have to do the time. But
yes,
such a big number, a huge number, you know, you also see people with psychiatric problems, you know, that they get released and they get some pills and they end up in the streets again, but no support, nothing, because there's no support, you know, after incarceration. And so they end up in prison again.
You know, that's the thing that really bothers me. That really bothers me, because I'm wondering why is it so imperative that they put them in prison? Why is it so difficult for them to realize that all they need to do is build some mental institutions, long-term residential treatment facilities, where they're not in a prison setting, but they're getting the help they need from doctors and nurses and psychologists and psychiatrists and social work? You know, the prisons are not getting appropriate medical providers in the prison. And these medical providers are doing, it's like they're experimenting with people. You know, I saw the talk about this bone marrow donating, prisoners' donation of bone marrows. And yet, when I see surgeries being done on prisoners and their bones are being cut into, and they're not asking to donate any bone marrow, why are they doing anything as far as cutting into their bones? So this is another major problem that people really need to start focusing on as well with their loved ones.
Yeah, I think they don't care, because they don't see incarcerated people at all. And so, you know, when a prisoner is not a human being, you can do whatever you want to do with him. That's what you see in the system. So they don't have this respect for human life. They don't see human life in incarcerated people. And that's major dangerous, because that's exactly the same as what happened in World War II, when Jews were no longer considered human beings. That's why they could do what they did. And you see the same back in the prison system. They don't care. And that's evil. For me, that's true evil.
Yeah. I want to ask another thing. Is that you've heard of the One World Order, right? One World Order?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Because sometimes I almost think that that's what's going to come about eventually if our politicians cannot come together, because there's so much division, even in the, you know, they come up with these bills, they come up with these, just like with the abortion thing, and there was a lot of division there, but they come up with bills and changes that they want to see happen, and they get brought down because of Congress, because of the division between Congress, between the politicians. So it almost seems like you mentioned, with them taking away the rights of the rights of women, it's not only with the abortions, but it's also going to be with other things that they're taking away. Little by little, they're taking away the rights of the people in America. So what happens then, when all rights are taken and it's left up to our legislative members, our government, to make, I don't know. I don't even know how I'm trying to say it.
Well, you know, what you then get is that you can, in fact, say that the whole United States becomes one big prison system. Because, you know, when you look in the prison system, rights are taken away. And if rights are taken away also in the communities, then everybody is incarcerated and dependent from privileges. And you get the same system outside and inside. It sounds maybe ridiculous, but, you know, I see the same patterns.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to think about one world order. I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well, you know what? Maybe I didn't phrase it right, because that's exactly what it seems like in America. It's going to become a a one leadership we're going to have in America. Like you say, it's going to be prison in and out of the prison system.
Yeah, you get totalitarian. You have to. I cannot call your country a democracy anymore.
Mm-mm.
Because also in, I don't know if it's in every state, but in a lot of states, voting is going to be far more difficult. So especially minorities will have far more difficulties to vote. Well, people in the prison cannot vote. And you have this, you know, your country more looks like a police state, you know, with all the violence, also the police violence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, for me, it more sounds totalitarian than democratic.
Yeah, taking away the rights of everyone and the voting rights in a lot of areas, it's almost like they're narrowing it down to reflect voters that they know will be voting for them. That's what it seems like, because even in Massachusetts recently, they said there were a lot of votes that weren't counted, but they also said that they came into the mail late. It was too late to count them. But think of all the votes there, and things could have been turned around too with the elections as far mm-hmm. as the
But I also think that now, right now, when you look at two parties, Republicans and Democrats, I don't think they differ so much. I think Republicans have almost become very on the right. The division between two is not so big anymore.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you look at Russia, you know, what we heard many times, and I'm not pro-Russian, I don't take a side because I can't. But then you hear, you know, in Russia you cannot talk, in Russia they only have the state television and all that. But I think, what's the difference between that and your country? Because in your country everything is decided by corporations and privatized. Like things on television, it's all by companies, decided by companies who pay for the television time. So corporations decide what you see on TV. That's not your own free will. You have no choice. You seem to have a choice, but you don't have a choice. So what's the difference between state television in Russia and the privatized television in the United States? I don't see a difference.
I don't see much of a difference either, because every time the TV is turned on, we're hearing either sports, we're hearing either the insurrection, the attack on the Capitol. We're hearing the same things all the time. And if we're not hearing it all the time, it's repetitive. And I say every other country, they report their news and that's the end. They go on to more news. In this country, it's almost like they get stuck on the same old topics. But
yeah, well, voices like the voice of, well, he's passed away, but he had interesting lectures. Howard Zinn, who wrote the book, A People's History of America, of the United States, which is forbidden in a lot of schools. I don't know if it's still forbidden, but it was forbidden. Noam Chomsky, he's a critic. I see a lot of critics, you know, who are politicians or who studied politics or did other studies, who worked at university, so they are smart, they know what they're talking about, they are the critical voice, but they are not on the corporal televisions. The corporations
yeah.
don't want you to see that. The corporal power doesn't want you to think independently. They only want you to think what they want you to think. You buy, so you think what they want you to think. You buy what they want you to buy, and etc. So you are not free. Freedom in your country is an illusion. Forget about it. You have owners. George Carlin was right.
Yeah.
And that's that.
They're brainwashing everyone.
Yeah, only to make money. Look at, you know, Bezos. Look at Elon Musk. How many billions they have.
You know, you mentioned out.
And the big banks and Wall Street and all that.
You mentioned the extremists, and I want to say we have, like you mentioned, with it's the Trump side goes to one extreme, and the Democrats they go to another extreme. But theirs is not strong enough. It's not assertive enough. Whereas the other, if you notice, every part of the Trump side was aggressive, and I don't want to see aggression in this country. But at the same time, sometimes I think our current president was too passive, you know, and just not a leader as he should be, not assertive as he should have been. And now it's coming to that time of reelection, and they mentioned on the news that his ratings are very, very low. So now it's between the whoever runs in the Democratic Party, or Trump has already admitted or stated that he's going to be running, and I don't think he'll get in, but he might. Somebody on his side, the Republican Party, may get in. Then again, Trump may get in again because of his assertiveness. I don't know. And that's why I say so many things are happening in this country right now that's it's pitiful. You know, this country has fallen. It's dysfunctional. It's insecure. It's got people insecure. And a lot of the economy right now is in bad shape. And there's so much violence going on. But people hate violence. But, again, they pay all kinds of money to see these violent movies. These producers are making money off of it. But going back to the mental institutions that used to be and no longer, I was going to say again, when a lot of prisoners, when they get diagnosed, they're getting diagnosed as being antisocial, which is letting the public believe that these people cannot be in society because they're antisocial, when in fact, I believe a lot of them are suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. It doesn't only have to be those in the military that suffer from PTSD. It can be the people in the communities who have been traumatized. It can be prisoners who were traumatized prior to or even during their time in prison. And the public, people in society need to realize that these things are for real. And they do happen. And not everybody should be stereotyped. And not every prisoner should be behind those prison walls. They should be in treatment facilities long term.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if there would be more treatment on forehand, a lot of crimes would not have been committed.
Exactly.
So, you know, from that perspective, you can say that the crimes are not only the fault of the people who committed those crimes, but also a lack of the right help before the crime was committed. When you look at restorative justice, there are always three parties who share the responsibility around the crime, and that's the offender in the first place. There's the victim and there's the community. There are three parties, and they all have to look at themselves, especially the community. The offender and the community, they have to look at themselves too. Community too.
Yeah.
In Norway, when a crime is committed, the community reflects on itself and asks itself, what happened wrong in our, what did we do, what could we do better as a community to prevent this crime from happening? It's very easy to blame only one person and then walk away. That's too easy. It doesn't work that way.
And that's what people do in this country. They put the blame. When there was I don't know if you heard about the school shootings. I believe it was in Texas, where 19 children and a few teachers were killed by assault weapons by one person. And it took them an hour. They were all at the school. The police, everybody was at the school. Inside the school, and it took them an hour to go into the room where this young man was shooting up everybody. Well, what happened after that? They all try to cover up. They all try to put the blame on one person, the school police officer who called them. And he lost his job. But it wasn't just that particular person that should have been fired. It was a lot of them. And that's still going on. They're still, the families of those children are still trying to get justice for their children. They're still asking that a lot of those other police officers also be fired.
Yeah, and I think if you want to look at prevention, what can you do beforehand before something like a school shooting happens? Is that people first should have to ask themselves why do we have these school shootings? I don't know what school shooting is. We don't have them here. It never happened. Not in history. Never. We never have had. We don't know, you know, once I saw on television these signs that you have in the schools for children with instructions what to do with a school shooting. The word lockdown, we didn't know what it was until the pandemic came. Before the pandemic, we never used the word lockdown. We didn't know what it was. Yeah, we knew it from the dictionary, but not from experience. So as a community and as a society, you should ask yourselves, how are we functioning that we do have these school shootings? Those are very important questions. Why do we have mass incarceration? Why do we have racism? That's what people should ask and discuss about, think about on forehand. Not afterwards, but on forehand.
Yes.
And listen to each other. Instead of all these biases and all that. I think those questions are very important and crucial, but who asks them? You see?
I look at it this way. We have a problem with humility in America as well. People cannot be humble. And this is a major problem that goes along with the retaliation, the vengeance. You know, people are targeted, people are getting involved, people get involved in affairs that don't have anything to do with them. You know, they hate people that they don't even know. This is all because they want to feel, be up there with the big shots, or the ones that they feel are more powerful or more influential or whatever the case may be. And that all contributes to the problems in this country. The recidivism rate is sky high. Suicide rate, sky high in America.
Yeah, but I think it's also part of the culture, because in your culture you know everybody has to make it on his own. That's a choice. That's the American dream. You know, you can always make it for yourself. You have to make it for yourself. So you know, in your country it's also you know, you also see people who lose everything two or three times in their life. You know, their houses, their jobs, everything. They end up on the streets and then they have to build up again. That's the United States. So that's different from Europe. And but because of that, there is a lot of comparing towards other people. You know, you compare yourself with other people. And materialism is a very important thing. The American dream is mostly a material dream. You know, you are a homeowner, you have your own car. That's all part of the American dream. That's you know, in the past, I always thought that the American dream was about, that it was more about, you know, that you build your own character, who you are, that you grow to who you are, deeper justice, in fact. But then I found out that it's mostly a materialistic dream. So a lot is focused on, you know, money, materialism, and less is focused on humanity, equality. And that's why you also have mass incarceration.
Yes.
Because
we're running out of time, I want you to give the audience your information once again so that they can get in contact with you. And also, when the book's ready to come out, I would really love to have you bring that out as well.
Well, I hope that the book will come out this summer. So that's the first thing. my email is marionjacobs67@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook with my Facebook page, Deeper Justice. I'm also on Instagram with my own name and on LinkedIn. And I have a website, www.deeperjustice.com. And a client of mine is building a new website for me, and that will be, but I will mention that later when it's ready, when it's in the air. It's not in the air yet. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much. So much. And any final words?
I hope that people will think about what we have discussed, you know, just think a little bit about it, discuss it at home a little bit about it, try to, you know, find their own opinion about it. And I hope that people take care of each other, and nobody is better or worse. You are who you are, and there is no judgment on that. And don't forget that 2.3 million people behind bars, they did commit a crime, but they are as human as we all are.
Thank you, Marian. Thank you. When you speak about these things, you do it with real care and compassion and real wisdom. And I want everyone to know that Marian Jacobs has been faithful in coming on the show to talk about these issues, to try to bring people in this country together, as well as trying to do something about the mass incarceration that exists in this country. So please get in contact with Marian Jacobs. Get in contact with advocates around the country that are trying to make changes in the prison, that are trying to reform the parole boards, that are trying to work on the criminal justice prison reform. And let's pray that something positive comes up soon, because we're heading downhill fast. So I thank you all for listening in. Marian, thank you once again for coming on. And we will now be ending this episode. Thank you so much, Marian.
Thank you too, Leona.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.